I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here. Christopher Prosperi, senior contributor of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. Senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Faith.
All right. We have, as you know, Martha Stewart Living food editor Lucinda Scala Quinn lined up, and she's going to tell us how to make this thing, this dish that Chris just made for us and we just ate. This is a velvet soft salmon, and anybody can make this. All you need is an oven and aluminum foil, plus her razzle-dazzle caper green sauce to drizzle on top. It's easy, it's delicious, and that recipe, wasn't that unbelievable?
I actually would like to eat this every night this week.
I know, I'm seriously.
It's so simple that you could eat it every week, every
so
day this week.
Amazing. Really like it. And that recipe is on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze site right now at WNPR.org. Just search programs for the show. All right, we're going to jump to drinks before we do food and kitchen tricks, before we have our chocolate tasting, before we talk to Lucinda. There are so many vodkas out there, as we know. You can't go in.
That's right.
Isn't that crazy?
Confusing sometimes.
It's very confusing.
I'm so glad we have smartphones because it saves me many, many times.
Do you have a vodka app?
Well, there'll be a new... That's a good idea.
It is.
Here we go. Send your check into the food show. Okay, so the one I tried the other day is one of the best vodkas that I have had in a long time. And guess what? It is made in Connecticut.
Wow, really?
So, yes.
When do we get to hear that?
I know. So here it is. It turns out it is great for people who are gluten sensitive because it is made from corn.
Oh,
organic
wow.
corn, yeah. And it is just plain delicious, gluten or no gluten. It's about $23 a bottle. It's called Rime, R-I-M-E,
cool name.
Vodka, and it's made by Westford Hill Distillers in Eastern
cool.
Connecticut.
I
and
love them.
Starting to show up in bars and liquor stores. Yeah. This is one delicious vodka, Rime, R-I-M-E, and you can see the link right now at our site, WNPR.org. Search programs for the Faith Middleton Show. We
Did
put that up there so you can find it.
Do they come in flavors
Not
as
right
well?
Now.
Not
no,
yet.
No, just organic
but you really
corn.
Liked it. Yeah.
So it is delicious.
Did you have it just on the rocks?
Time.
I had it both straight up and on the rocks.
Great.
Delicious.
See, I like a good vodka martini.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like I'm going to have to get a bottle.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so as we see restaurants opening, we see them closing, and I am sad to see the dressing room, Michelle Michon's restaurant, closing.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the Westport Country Theater in Connecticut. Though I have to say I am happy for Michelle and his wife, Lori, because Michelle's going to put all of his attention now, he's decided, on Wholesome Wave.
Yeah. Wow,
and that is his project of getting healthy food, farm-fresh food, to SNAP recipients and underserved communities nationwide. So,
he does such a
Michelle,
great job
we are cheering you on.
For sure.
All right. And here is one more. Should we do one more drink tip? Because we just tried this. I discovered this in the wine store. This is a beer that has been brought in from Spain, and it has won countless world awards, these huge international competitions. I had never seen this before. The Spanish are so good at food and drink. So I'm going to call this Daura. It'll be on our website, D-A-U-R-A. It is from Estrella Dam Daura. That's the full name of the maker, but big on the label, D-A-U-R-A, Daura. This is an imported premium lager. What did you think?
Yeah, you said it best, clean.
I really liked it,
too.
It is
so clean tasting.
I wish I had more words to describe it. I just don't know how to describe beer, but I really liked it.
So it is light in profile, and yet it has a bit of richness. It has, you know, a little bit of complexity, and yet it stays fresh.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, clean and fresh.
Yeah, I just thought this was so fantastic. And guess what?
What?
It's a gluten-free beer.
Really?
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I was with a friend was looking for a gluten-free beer, and the wine store said, I don't know. He said, I've never tasted any of these. He said, but everybody is starting to come in and grab this.
Huh?
And I said, is that from Spain? And I know a little Spanish. And he said, yes, it is. And so I tried it too. And I thought, see, I didn't want to surprise
you. Nope.
I had no idea.
I've tried
it,
some
other
gluten
you would never
beers.
Know.
And, you know, they're a little funky. Mm-hmm. This is fantastic.
Refreshing.
No one would,
clean-tasting beer.
So, Daura, D-A-U-R-A.
Well, maybe they should all go gluten-free.
All right, before we get to our chocolate tasting, well, I'm on the subject of gluten-free.
You know, I've been looking at this for like a couple of minutes across. I was like, what is that on her table? It's a frozen pizza box.
I try all these things, okay. You know, and my friend said, you know, I have to have gluten-free pizza. So she brought this. This is made by Udi's, U-D-I. They make a lot of very good gluten-free products.
Okay.
I've tried a bunch of the pizzas because of my friends, and, you know, you suffer.
Okay.
Right. They're not a
gluten-free eater in the pizza department. This is pretty darn good.
Really?
This is the Udi's gluten-free with uncured pepperoni pizza.
Wow, so very cool.
So I thought to myself.
What's the crust? If it's not flour, right?
So the crust is a brown rice flour.
Rice flour.
Potato starch, olive oil, tapioca starch, yeast, salt, and there you go.
Wow.
So here's what I did. So I tasted it just plain, and I thought, you know, this is pretty good. You know, it's the best one I've ever had in a box, and I would eat it, you know. So I thought that was pretty great. And then I thought, well, now, here's what you have to do. If you're a gluten-free eater, you just got to snazz it up. So I took this pizza with the uncured pepperoni, which is very good. It was actually better than regular pepperoni. So I took this pizza, and I added to it just a tiny bit. It has cheese on it already, but a tiny bit of feta, some diced Kalamata olives, and then I chopped up some cilantro, and then a little drizzle of olive oil.
Nice.
That sounds really great.
That's a good pizza topping combination.
Yeah. So I don't know. It was what I had. I love those flavors.
Yeah,
so
the feta.
Just go ahead and fool with if you're a gluten-free eater or you have a boxed pizza you don't like, just mess around with it. Have some fun with it and put the flavors you do like on top. It took me 2 seconds to do that.
It'll cover up that cardboard flavor. Is that what you're trying to say?
No, this is not a cardboard pizza.
Usually they are, though, right? I mean, I've had some of the gluten-free pizzas and you're like,
Yeah. Is it more the texture of the
texture? Yeah.
So this is mozzarella, uncured pepperoni, and basil. Yeah. And it's made by Udi's, U-D-I, apostrophe S. And we'll have that on our website, too. It's gluten-free, WNPR.org. Just search programs for the Faith Middleton Show. You'll see the link to the food schmooze.
So many people gluten-free now. We see it every – I was telling someone the other night, we see it not every week in the restaurant. We see it every day now in the restaurant.
Really?
We keep gluten-free bread on the line for our gluten-free customers just because – and we keep it on the line, and that's right where we serve because we need it every day.
Well, I gather that there are some people who aren't classically diagnosed. Some people, the most serious would be people with celiac disease, and that you can't
very
even
careful.
Make food in the same room. Mm-hmm. That's very, very serious. You can die if this is untreated. And the other people just have discovered they feel so much better eating this way. And so I congratulate you as a restaurant for doing that.
I have one friend who breaks out, so she doesn't get discomfort. And I wouldn't have believed it unless I saw it. I mean, she ate a bagel for breakfast, and the rash on her arm, it just kept growing and growing. And it was just – and again, she doesn't have discomfort, but, I mean, there's so many different variations of gluten intolerance.
Yeah, I think we're going to see this. There's a lot of debate about why this is happening. But in any case, we like to – because this crowd is so large, we like to tell folks how to eat gluten-free and what the good versus bad. We do. So I saw that in the New York Times, Christopher Brooks decided to try an Indian restaurant in Newtown, Kolam. Mm. Now, you know how we love Coromandel, which is in Darien and also in Orange, Connecticut. They have a group of restaurants. And so this is Kolam, K-O-L-A-M, is one of the Coromandel group.
Oh.
And I didn't know that. And so people in the Newtown area now have this Indian restaurant. They've been around for a couple years. And he gave it a good and liked a number of things. The Purduval seafood, the Kadamita bainsan, the Chenal rasam, the Chameli chops, the Mamsam kura, the Kotsi chetanad, and on it goes. I have no idea what I
was going to say. I need a dictionary.
I
love
things?
Indian food, but it is one of those when I go into a restaurant, I'm lost and I have to find a waiter or a waitress to sort of guide me through. I tell her what I like or he what I like, and then they sort of point me in the right direction because, what did you just say?
this Coromandel group, I mean, like Thali in New Haven, just fabulous Indian food at a very high level. And the Coromandel group, same thing. I think they were first on the scene with the Thali group, showing us what the highest level Indian cuisine could be. And so we're really lucky in this area.
They just didn't want to serve another chicken tikka masala to another American,
that
right?
That one I know.
Don't we all?
So let me tell you about this thing with guacamole. I was looking at the Oprah magazine to see what they were doing with food during my food cruising. And they talked to a blogger, Faith Durand, and she said she was thinking, because she had to make guacamole several days ahead for something.
Turns brown.
Yeah. Yes. What can I do? And she said it dawned on her, water. If she covered the guacamole with a thin layer of water, that she could store it for up to 2 days in an airtight container, and then when you're ready to eat it, you pour off the water and stir. Jeez.
That's very interesting.
Air is what turns it brown. And
I bet there's a lot of things you could do that with.
But couldn't you just take Saran wrap and make sure that it's like a skin over it?
It
never works.
It never works.
Plus, it's weird to have the food sitting in plastic. You know, I mean, doesn't it seem?
Yeah, I guess. But it almost seems weird to have a coating of water.
Yeah, but the water doesn't get in.
But I guess it doesn't penetrate.
No, because
she says it works.
Oil and water don't mix, so it wouldn't penetrate because avocados, oil.
That is genius.
Isn't it?
That's
really genius.
All right, I got to try that. That's a really good
tip. 2 days ahead.
Yeah.
So I love that tip. All right, here's what we're going to do. We have coming up a little bit later in the show, Lucinda Scala Quinn. She is a food editor for Martha Stewart Living, and she has a new cookbook out, and we have a recipe up on our site right now for salmon that is so velvety, so amazing, and crazy easy. We went nuts eating this dish and couldn't believe how simple this is just by baking it in aluminum foil. Chris did this for us, so we're going to talk to her about that. And that recipe is at our website right now, WNPR.org. So is the name of our pizza that is gluten-free. So is our new beer from Spain, which is gluten-free and in our area. We're going to try chocolate after this break. I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. More mouthwatering conversation and fun here on the Food Schmooze. We'll be right back.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread.
Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'm Faith Middleton. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. We want to say thanks to our talented crew, senior contributor Christopher Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, Eugene Amatruda, Marion Roy, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. We thank you first and foremost for listening. We want to do some kitchen tips where we cruise through all the various food publications. We come up with some ourselves and tell you about great things to do. But first, it's time for a chocolate tasting.
Yes.
And so our friends, Jerome Bertuglia, who is at Berkshire Bark Chocolate. You've probably seen this in a variety of stores. They're in the Berkshires in Sheffield, Massachusetts, just over the Connecticut line. They are Food Schmooze listeners, and we're so glad about that. And so they said, you know, do you know what we're doing? And I thought, yes, I see your chocolate all the time. So we just here on the show had a chocolate tasting, and we want to talk about some of these chocolates. Now, these guys were all in the food world. CIA, White Hart Inn in Litchfield, you know, in Salisbury, rather. So, and they decided, you know, they started out doing some catering and then got into chocolate, and this has really taken off for them.
And I like them a lot.
So they have these Berkshire Bark chocolate bars, and they have one called Jumpin' Java. That's Belgian dark chocolate, roasted almonds, espresso toffee, caramelized cocoa nibs, and crushed coffee beans. Now, you folks tasted that one. I can't taste that one because I can't have coffee. But what?
It was yummy.
You liked it. I did.
I liked it. You really tasted the coffee.
So yes, you did.
They gave me a warning and they said that one. If you eat a lot of it, that's the buzz bar.
That's the buzz bar.
That's cool. So that's a 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You should eat a half a bar.
In the toffee making? Yes, that is a good idea. In the toffee making where you would usually put in water to make the toffee, they substitute espresso, they told me, which I thought was the wildest thing.
Pretty good.
It's got a nice coffee flavor, but also an aroma that is. Yeah.
And there's another one, Mocha Buzz, which is Belgian milk chocolate, whole roasted almonds, homemade caramel, cocoa nibs, crushed espresso, coffee beans. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the espresso bean bar. And you just tasted that one.
Yeah.
So and you like that one. Now, they had said to me that one of their most popular bars is one called White Lightning. Belgian white chocolate, whole roasted cashews, crystallized ginger, fresh lemon zest, and sea salt. I frankly said to myself, I'm not a white chocolate fan. Chris, I think you feel that way too. And we were scarfing
blown
that
out of
down.
The water.
It was really good.
I think that was the best one.
It really was.
It was
so
one
great.
Of the best ones anyway, right?
Well,
you said you could taste each of the things.
Chris. Yeah, you really could taste the ginger and the lemon, right, and the sea salt. I mean, everything came right to the front. And I mean, cocoa – I mean, you think about what white chocolate is. It's just the cocoa butter.
My favorite was – I have to say my favorite was Pretzelogical. And it's Belgian dark and milk chocolate, pretzels, homemade sea salt caramel, and natural peanut butter.
Yeah, that's a good combination.
My favorite bar. Yes.
That's a seriously good combination.
I don't remember trying that one.
Yeah, let's see. Oh, no, that one wasn't here. Now, let's see. There's only one. There was one missing. That was in the car right in. Let me try this. I'll save some for them.
Let me switch topics now to go over to Tropical Heat. This is their Belgian dark chocolate, whole roasted macadamia nuts, mango, papaya, pineapple, coconut, ancho chili powder, and cayenne pepper. This has quite a lot of heat in it.
Serious heat.
At first we said, well, we're not sure we can taste enough of the chocolate. And then we all looked at each other after about 5 minutes and said, let's have some more.
That was crazy, right? Because at first I was like, I like it, but no, I wouldn't have another piece. And then it just like drew you to it. Look at it over there. Mm. It wants me to eat another piece.
I just kept eating it. It was great. So we give a thumbs up to Berkshire Bark Chocolate. And nice job. Thank you, Jerome Bertulia, David Renner, and Kevin Schmitz for Berkshire Bark Chocolate and your chocolate making operation in Sheffield, Massachusetts. Hence the name Berkshire Bark Chocolate.
Truly, thank you.
And you can send more to Lori anytime.
I absolutely loved it.
Okay, here we go. Let's do some kitchen tips. We've been cruising around. Gave you the tip that I found from Oprah's magazine on the guacamole. And we have a few more. And now we've cruised over to Cook's Illustrated. Jonathan, what do you have?
Mine's from Kate Chuprovich. And it's about opening a stubborn jar. And I'm actually kind of surprised that this would work. All she does is she uses a thin metal spoon as a lever and just wedges it in between the top and the jar and lightly pushes until the seal pops.
And then you can take it right
which
off.
Why don't we just always do that if that works?
No kidding.
Because I do buy devices that open jars.
Or you hang it on the counter and put it under the faucet.
At some point, I'm going to crack either the tiles on the floor or on the counter. That's going to happen. Right. I can just promise
you. Yeah, but that totally makes sense, right? Just pop the seal and you're done.
All right, Chris, what do you have?
I'm still skeptical.
Give it a try.
I'm going to get you a spoon and a jar of pickles.
I have to say, they're pretty good testers over there at Cook's Illustrated. Go ahead. Yeah.
All right, so I love this one because this is something that I would do because I love oats. And this comes from Annie Smith of Auburn, Alabama. And she, like me, loves steel-cut oats. But she says that, you know, when she makes it, it takes too long in the morning. And when you get a recipe, it always makes too much. And she always has too much left over. So she doesn't do it. And then she figured out this great way of making it.
This is oatmeal for one?
This is oatmeal for one. And it's great because you do it kind of – well, let me tell you. So you start with a 1-quart size bowl, 2/3 of a cup of water, a pinch of salt, and 3 tablespoons of steel-cut oats. So yeah, it's one portion, right? You take that and you place it in the microwave, right, for 1.5 minutes. Now you do this the night before. You take it out of the microwave. You let it cool a little bit, cover it with plastic, and put it in the refrigerator.
So when you're setting up your coffee maker.
Oh, yeah, totally. And I do that. I totally do that. I have a routine before bed setting up coffee. And now I'm going to do this. See if you can have
– So how much –
1.5 minutes. So it's 2/3 of a cup of water, 3 tablespoons of the oats, and you put that in a 1-quart bowl in the microwave, a microwavable bowl, of course, in the microwave for 1.5 minutes.
And then what, in the refrigerator?
And then you just sort of let it cool on the counter while you're doing your other things. Wrap it in plastic wrap. You know, once it gets down to room temperature, wrap it in plastic wrap and throw it in the fridge.
All right.
Then
and
when
in
you
the
wake in the morning, and this is all you have to do, take it out of the refrigerator, take the plastic off it.
And say, my, you've grown.
Yeah. But then 50% power on the microwave for 5 minutes. And you have oatmeal. You have one portion of perfect
steel-cut
oats. That's terrific.
It's a great tip.
I have sometimes made oatmeal for a week.
Me too.
The weekends. And then I just take off chunks and microwave the chunks.
Me too. And add a little bit of milk and just
hydrate
it. And it's
that works too. But this
but that's
sounds
planning ahead. And
fresh.
Chris doesn't do that. I'm more like Annie here. Yeah. That's just way too much work.
Chris, do you ever make oatmeal in your slow cooker?
I've done it as a testing of a recipe, but again, that takes planning, and
we've
I'm not a good planner.
We've talked about it in the food shows, but I have not tried it.
It's a really good way of making it, but I like her way. And you know me, I'm a crock pot person, but now I'm moving over to the microwave.
Well, that's so simple.
That's just right.
That is simple.
And I have a routine at night, and this will fit in perfectly with it. I just think a lot of people would do it if it just, like you said, even when you make a simple recipe, you end up with like so much of the stuff.
It's up there right now at WNPR.org. Search on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show, and of course you'll see the Fuchmo's link. The oatmeal is up there now with the salmon that we're going to be talking about. It was crazy delicious, one of the best salmon dishes with this razzle-dazzle green sauce, as I call it. Lucinda Scala-Quinn is joining us shortly, and she's the food editor for Martha Stewart Living. She has a new cookbook called Mad Hungry Cravings, so we look forward to that. Lori, what tip do you have?
Well, I have a tip from Joel Esposito from Jacksonville, Florida. Now, Joel has a little problem with his peanut butter and jelly sandwich. He likes to make them for lunch, and then he's very disappointed come lunchtime because the jelly side of the sandwich is soggy. So to remedy that, Joel has come up with this solution. He takes his bread and puts peanut butter on both sides, so it kind of acts as a sealer, and then he applies the jelly to both sides of the bread, and then it doesn't get soggy. Now, I have my own tip for Joel. I think he should cut back on the jelly.
Is this too much jelly?
I think he's putting a little too much jelly.
But
this will work, too.
What if you like that sweet with your salty peanut butter?
That's true. Mm. I guess he likes a lot of sweet. But that's a good alternative if you can't, cut back on the jelly.
That's right. So he puts peanut butter on
both
sides of the bread.
So it sort of seals
the
bread.
Peanut butter, jelly, and peanut butter sandwich.
That sounds so good. I used to work with a guy, Bob, when I was a newspaper reporter a long time ago, and his wife made him the biggest peanut butter and jelly sandwich I have ever seen every single day.
Like
did
thick.
It have to do with the bread or the
thick with peanut butter and jelly?
Like a half a jar.
Yeah, I mean, the bread looked like looked puny.
And then he couldn't talk while he was eating.
I think of it still all these years later on how delicious. And he was a skinny guy, you know. I mean, it was amazing.
Peanut butter's good for you.
Well, but if you ate it every day, you would be as big as a house, you would think.
It's got a lot of fat in there.
But if
it looks so good.
I'm not a jelly person.
I wish I could get away with
it. Oh, well, then what about Fluffernutter sandwiches?
I never had those as a kid.
You didn't?
Neither did I.
Do you have them?
No.
I still have them.
You still have them?
Peanut butter and marshmallow fluff.
I've never had marshmallow fluff.
Do you do white bread?
I like Pepperidge Farm for everything. And sometimes I've been known to toast the bread, then put the peanut butter. And then the
warm.
Yes,
that's how I do
so
my
it's warm and it's kind of melty and it gets a little messy. Once in a while, you can stick a little Hershey bar on there.
Whoa.
Wow. She's complaining about the guy with the too much jelly.
Yeah. All right, you're right.
Here we go.
Sorry, Joel.
This is from Cook's Illustrated also, Mastering Kitchen Towel Hang-Ups. So Linda Satzker in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, she kept putting her kitchen towel on the oven door handle, as many people do, and every time you open it, it falls on the floor. And so she came up with this unusual solution. It dawned on her that her golf towel has a grommet on the corner,
yep,
so that it can hang on the bag. So it, you know, it's one of those silver or gold holes, a metal grommet. And so she got some of those golf towels and took a shower curtain ring over the bar on her stove. And, you know, that S loop, then puts the towels, the grommet end, right over the hook. And it really, there's a drawing of it. It looks very cool looking. Really cool looking.
That's a good idea, because it's the same material, the golf towels and the kitchen towels.
And can you wash the grommet without having it get rusty?
Yeah, because
they're made of brass or stainless steel. So cool. Linda, I love that solution.
I'm a towel person in the kitchen, so I like this idea.
I can verify this.
Yeah, I like towels, lots of them. So I'd have to have, like, hooks everywhere.
Yeah. I like a lot of towels, too.
Do you use a lot of towels? I say for every dish I make, I have to have two towels.
I'm constantly washing kitchen towels. Yeah. So this is one final way to minimize flour spray. Every single time I open a flour bag, it never fails. Poof, it's all over the counter. I'll do it gently because I know it's coming, but it just rains down on the counter. And so David Lowry in Pittsburgh also wrote into Cook's Illustrated. He said the simplest thing to do is, before opening the top, slap it with your hand several times, and it makes the flour settle inside, and then when you open it, it doesn't spray all over the place.
That's now, too easy.
See, right. It's like the lid thing. It sounds too easy.
But it must work.
Yeah, I guess.
I wonder, though, does it pack the flour so much that it affects anything that you're baking?
Measurements.
Measurements. You don't want packed flour, right?
Oh, well, I can't imagine that Cook's Illustrated would not think
maybe
of that.
Maybe you have to mix it up.
We're very skeptical today.
Yes, we are.
Very questioning.
I'm thinking.
You two are.
That's true.
I'm with Faith on this one.
Contrarian.
I have seen Cook's Illustrated.
Yeah.
And Cook's Illustrated tests things to
nth
degree. So
right.
I'm going with Cook's Illustrated
on
almost everything they say.
I'll give my flour a mix.
We are about to talk to Lucinda Scala-Quinn right after this break coming up. Chris, tell us quickly how you made the salmon. I am so crazy about this recipe. It is amazingly easy. It was velvet coming out of this aluminum foil packet.
That must be the theme of today, is too easy, because this recipe really is too easy. You just start off with a little bit of salmon and a sheet of tinfoil. So you rip off a sheet of tinfoil. You take the salmon. You season it both sides with salt and pepper. And then you put the salmon in the middle of the foil and you fold it over like a loose pouch, right? And fold it over. And then you take that, put it on a cookie sheet, put it in the oven.
Oh, and that is my kind of cooking.
And this is what's so great about it. It actually steams inside the foil about 20 minutes, and it's still a little rare in the middle, right? So it's still soft, right?
It is like velvet,
like
chamois cloth. It's just amazing. And then her sauce is so great. I call it razzle dazzle sauce because it's this perky, bright, amazing.
Too easy.
And so simple.
Go ahead. A cup of mayonnaise, the zest and juice of one lemon, and then scallions, capers, parsley, dill, chopped up. I even took all that, threw it in a big pile in the middle of the cutting board, and just chopped it like that. And then the juice went in the juice actually went in the in with the mayonnaise, and then shoveled it all in there, mixed it.
I want to tell you that the trick with this is, if you're someone who either can't have mayonnaise or you think it's too many calories for me, all I do is substitute yogurt.
Yeah,
and I have
cream.
Made this sauce with just yogurt, and it is fantastic.
Okay.
So that's just a tip for you. So this recipe is at our website right now. That's WNPR.org. Search programs for the Faith Middleton Show. Of course, you will see the Food Schmooze link. And I am telling you, this is one of the best dishes that we have ever had up at this site. It is ridiculously easy and
so
good for you. Oh, yeah. Just fall down delicious.
You could go home and make this in no time.
Yes, that's right. Perfect for weeknight cooking, actually.
Perfect for weeknight cooking. Throw it in the oven, go do something else, it's done.
And if you want to impress your friends for weekend cooking and not, you know, go crazy, this is the recipe for you. So it's at our website right now at WNPR.org. Search programs for the Faith Middleton Show. Lucinda Scala Quinn, Mad Hungry Cravings, her new cookbook from Martha Stewart Living. More delicious conversation after a quick break. Please stay with us.
Popsicle toes.
Faith Middleton with the gang, and this is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR, and to join the conversation with us on Facebook, search The Faith Middleton Show. We are with Chris Brassberry, Lori Mack, Jonathan McNichol, and I am so delighted, as always, to welcome back Lucinda Scala Quinn, who is, I think, the food genius at Martha Stewart Living. And every time she comes out with something, talk about tested and true. It is always a knockout. We were just talking about Lucinda's salmon in the packet that we had, just raving about it. I know it was a trick of her mother's. And so her new cookbook is called Mad Hungry Cravings, and I cannot wait to talk about this. Lucinda, welcome back to the Food Schmooze.
Thank you. Hi, Faith and crew. I'm so happy to be back with you guys.
Oh, it's so great to have you. So, and of course, we're going to have your cookbook at our site, WNPR.org. It's there right now. The whole idea with this is your philosophy is if you've got these cravings, why not eat them, but make it yourself?
Yeah, in my day job, you know, I work, obviously, food director for Martha Stewart, which is a whole other big thing. But at home, I have three hungry boys and a husband. I have a, you know, product of three. I have three brothers, all male cousins, and for the most part. And so it's just been lots and lots and lots of food. The first book I wrote, Man Hungry Feeding Men and Boys, was really about just getting enough delicious food in their tummies. But then I discovered, being a New Yorker, that as they grew up, they really were taken by the allure of the streets, you know, the hot dogs on the corner, a slice of pizza. And I started to muse on that idea of cravings and how we all have them, and how if I didn't figure out a way to sort out these adolescents' boys' cravings, that I was going to lose them to the fast food franchises out there in the world. Mm-hmm. So I sat out to look at everything, the diners, the pizza parlors, the chicken shacks, the hot dog stands, everything that they wanted to go nibble on, and then a few other things like family memories and all that sort of thing, and just decided to try to address cravings in a simple, concise fashion at home with healthier ingredients, and to the first point you made, tested recipes that really work. Because if there's one bugaboo I have, it's when somebody goes to the trouble to make a recipe and it doesn't work. So that's really high up on my priority list as a home cook, and you know, and I know you know what I mean.
And doing what you do, you know,
exactly.
It's you've got to have the trust there, or it's a mess.
Yeah, and the recipe we made last night, my staff was so impressed at me and the lack of mess that I made. Because they're just like, you're just going to do tinfoil? We're usually right behind you with, you know, the dishwasher, the pot washer, a couple people scrubbing the counters.
My mom, I have to credit my mom, Rosemary. She really set that standard where if don't use four pots, use one if you can, but don't sacrifice flavor. So it's always like, what's the littlest amount you have to do to make the biggest biggest impact, and that means the whole picture, not just eating, but cleaning up and time and all that stuff. But I never want to sacrifice, you know, the health and the flavor. So I'm happy to hear that, that it worked out for you.
All right, let's go to hash brown egg topper, because this is one of those things. You go into a diner and, you know, out come those gorgeous looking hash brown potatoes. And here I'm looking at this picture of your skillet with the gorgeous brown crumbly bits in the potatoes and these eggs, fried eggs sitting on top of them. So tell me how you came up with this one.
So that's just an epiphany. You know, everyone loves the diner. And if you'd stop when you're on the road, people would get, you know, you get your eggs and your bacon and your, you know, and you have your hash browns. And of course, at home, when there's 500 hungry people, I just always keep a really nicely seasoned large cast iron pan on top of my stove. So I just cut to the chase. What do we love? We love the crispy, oniony little bits of potatoes. But then you also love when the yolk runs, that beautiful yellow creamy yolk goes into that crispy potatoes, and that's just it. So I thought, okay, in this pan, just get those potatoes and onions cooking. You can use some pepper, you could put in some bacon or chorizo, get that whole business all brown and wonderful. And then I don't want to use another pan, so I just made these little divots all over the pan, you know, just sort of a divot amongst fried potatoes. Put a tad of butter in there, cracked the eggs right in there, put the top on, and then voila, you're feeding five. You're just scooping up some of those potatoes with the egg right there, you know, not turning a bunch of eggs, not going into a bunch of pans. And basically, that's that recipe in a nutshell.
Can I say, though, that the smartest thing that you figured out to do, in each of those holes, you put the egg, as you described, a pinch of salt, but you sprinkle on, before putting the lid on, you sprinkle on just a tiny bit of water, and that water creates steam. And that's what cooks, that's
so
what steams
it almost.
You know what I love about you, Faith? You notice all these little details that really obsess me, too. So this is another trick I learned with fried eggs early on. You know how you fry the egg, and oftentimes the top is all gooby, but the bottom is cooked. But anyway, if you put that egg in there, in your fat, and right away you put a teaspoon of water in that pan, and then you put the top on, you think about it, it makes so much sense. You've got steam on top that's cooking the top of the egg. So by the time the bottom's done, the top's done, and you've got the perfect egg. So now whenever I cook eggs in any guise, I'm always thinking about that. How do I cook the top as well as the bottom? And if I don't have a broiler or something like that, then the steam is the next way to go.
I am going to jump right over to something, because if we're talking about putting holes in things, this seems to be a trick.
Wait, I got to.
You're going to know right away, because I'm talking about your mom's old school meatloaf.
Oh, my gosh. Well,
this has holes in it, too. This is such a great recipe. I was crazy over this.
Well, I am an NPR fanatic, of course. And when I was in Minneapolis, I was able to work with one of your colleagues, in Lynn Rosetta Casper.
Oh, isn't she a great person?
She was crazy over this meatloaf, too. And this is, again, I'm loving, as we're talking, realizing how much my mom taught me. Here's the deal on that meatloaf. We all hated big chunks of onions when we were little, so she grated the onions and she grated the carrots. So you didn't know there was onions in there, but it dispersed amongst the meat, and it created moisture and flavor without big chunks of onions. So that's step one in that meatloaf, which has basically got like 4 and 5 ingredients. The other thing she did, which is awesome, and we used to fight as kids over this particular piece, she put 3 little holes along the length of the meatloaf, just put her finger right in there, and she filled those holes with chili sauce.
Genius.
And so when you got your piece of meatloaf, you would really hope that you got a little rivulet of chili sauce.
Isn't that the smartest thing?
That's so good.
Really good.
Now, we do have a whole theme here.
We do have a whole theme.
I know. I should
pick up on the whole theme.
Let me see if I can find any more.
Find any more holes.
You know.
I have something to fill the hole, which is another one of my favorite recipes here.
What?
Potato poppers.
I have that mark to talk about. Go ahead.
Actually, you could put those in the holes of the meatloaf, but that's another story. No, the scoop with that is, again, getting into the fast food thing and trying to lure the children away from convenience food that wasn't really very good for them, is that they couldn't understand why I never bought tater tots. I mean, I think it's okay to say this on the air, on NPR. And I just didn't want to buy that stuff. So one day I decided to figure out how to make tater tots, which is such a cool concept. Basically, you're just grating potatoes, pouring boiling water over those grated potatoes, let it sit for 10 minutes, squeeze it out, then you just mix it with like egg, flour, a little bit of salt and pepper, roll it in panko, and bake it in the oven with olive oil coated on it. And not only do you have a tater tot, but you've almost got like a tater tot on steroids, because those panko breadcrumbs create such a crunchy outside. You can't make enough of those. That's the only problem with that.
Gosh.
You can make the batter and all that stuff I told you and freeze it and then put it directly into the oven. So this is how my brain is always thinking. It's like, okay, you want your tater tots? Here's some potato. And then I have to name them something like potato poppers to get their attention as well.
You know, I've become speechless. I'm just staring into space. It's as if I've been injected with a drug listening to you talk about these baked potato poppers. It's just, I think, I just want to get up from my chair, leave everyone here, and start making these.
Because I'm one of three boys, and my mom had to do stuff like this to keep us just engaged in the kitchen, name things funny names, and right? Three boys. And I also noticed you said feeding 500. That was my mom's big thing. Feeding three boys is feeding 500.
Thing, not to go back, because you know this is part two of this cookbook, and I'm actually on work on part three on the Mad Hungry series. But the first one, Feeding Men and Boys, people would say to me, "Oh, you know, why are you leaving females out?" Or they would act like I was trying to say, "Oh, be barefoot and pregnant and cook for your man." And I said, "No, no, no. When you have a heap of boys and they're super starving, it's no joke.
No,
you better have a plan." And my agenda early on was not only do I want to have a plan, but I want to teach them to cook for themselves. And I'm proud to say that they're all on that path to varying degrees. But no girl who came over to my house to eat was asking for thirds, or while I was cleaning up dinner, starting a new meal. It's just a different world, and that's where I'm with this Mad Hungry series. It's like you don't want to be unprepared, and you also want to make it fun and get everybody at the table, because that's where the real stuff happens in life.
The idea that someone, our guest, who's risen to the top of one of the most important food corporations, you know, food empires in the United States, would be saying, "Stay home, pregnant and barefoot, to cook for your man," is the craziest idea I have ever heard.
I won't tell you exactly what reporter in what big city really challenged me, and I just laughed. I thought, you know,
things, you know, just don't even respond. Okay, so this is Lucinda Scala Quinn, who is director of food for Martha Stewart Living, does this Mad Hungry Craving series. Her latest book is called Mad Hungry Cravings. So 173 recipes for the food you want to eat, the food that you crave. And of course, in doing this and making it yourself, you're getting rid of all the preservatives. It doesn't take forever in the way these recipes are done. That's what we appreciate about this. And they taste so good. So these eggplant parm stacks, what a smart idea. So imagine slices of eggplant with just a little bit of everything in the round stacks rather than the entire tray. Go ahead.
Eggplant parm, I love it. It's funny. My husband does not like eggplant. And he actually calls eggplant, imagine this, the organ meat of vegetables. So that's fighting words for me, right? So I just want to make it good. Now, and I'm Italian, of course, so I sat there with my grandmother and my aunts and everybody, like, breading and frying and doing it again. And so I just decided to take the eggplant and grill it. But grilling eggplant, so often you get kind of a cottony center. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want that. So you have to make sure that you slice and grill your eggplant properly. Now, by grilling, I mean you can do it on an outdoor grill. You can do it on a grill pan. It's not complicated, but you're grilling your eggplant to start with, and then you're stacking it with all the little business that would be in an eggplant parmesan. So instead of breading and frying, you're making that mixture of breadcrumbs and grated cheese and a little bit of parsley and the stuff you put on the coating when you're going to fry your eggplant, and then stack it as if you're stacking your eggplant back together. You've got a piece of your eggplant. You have some of your yummy, breadcrumby, cheesy mixture. Then you're putting some mozz and then a little bit of tomato sauce, and then another stack, and you're repeating. And then if you can picture your pan, you have what amounts to about just a bunch of individual stacks that have the same flavor profile as eggplant parmesan, but that's all cooked in the oven. You haven't fried. The standard breading procedure is awesome, but it takes time. Flour, egg, breadcrumb, that takes a lot of time. And while it's delicious when it's done, well, you're also sucking up a heck of a lot of oil when you're frying breaded eggplant in oil.
Yeah. What'd your husband say? Did you win him over?
Well, you know, the thing is that I was all excited, and I started telling everybody, and I would do interviews like this and say how much he loved it. And then one day he goes, okay, calm down. I'm tolerating it, all right? It's not like you've changed my world.
Oh, I like
it. But
he
can't go from organ
honesty.
Meat of vegetable
to eating it.
I love it in a day.
No, that was a big move. I think he deserves some credit for it. Okay, the chicken chive burgers.
Oh, yeah.
So this is homage to Danny Meyer over at Shake Shack.
Well, you know, I was never a big burger eater myself, but I will say once that resurgence of those burgers that had, you know, just really delicious meat mixture, he had the special sauce down perfect, he had the bun perfect, and then burgers, like fast food burgers, became all the rage. And it made me realize that it's that combination, it's that burger with the toppings and the potato side. And so I decided to just put a menu together that was like a healthy version of a fast food burger. So we have the chicken chive burger.
Your ground chicken is a combination of light and dark meat.
Yep, and there again, Faith, you pointed out something really important, which is dark meat, which is generally, you know, thigh meat, is coming with a lot more moisture, a lot more texture. And
flavor.
Fat is the wrong word. It's like, whereas breast meat, which is nice in some instances, when you're trying to make a burger or do something, grind it up, you just got a bunch of dry sawdust if you're not careful, you know?
Uh-huh.
So I needed to make a burger that was going to have as much allure as a regular burger. So you needed to make sure that you had inside that burger enough oomph, you know, to really make it taste delicious. And to do that, it's really mustard and breadcrumbs and lemon juice and chive. And chive inside that chicken mixed throughout. You know, again, picture a fast food burger where you have, like, deliciousness from beef fat, but then you have an onion on top. So just continuing to try to kind of recreate that. The other thing I sorted out about a good burger is the bun. You can't take that for granted. So I like a bun where you've taken a nice sort of mushy bun. I'm using a whole wheat bun in this particular one because it's a little healthier. And if you either put it under the broiler or on the grill and you just get the actual part of the bun that's going to touch the burger to be kind of crispy, but then the outside stays sort of steamy and soft so that when you bite into it, you get that. It's like I really deconstructed the idea of what makes a burger great. And I also love my lettuce shredded and not like a slab of wet lettuce on a burger. That really doesn't do it for me.
That's so good, that detail.
Yeah, the little details like that. And then I like to serve this burger face with those baked potato poppers and then a shake that I came upon one day. I had a bunch of leftover buttermilk in my fridge, and then I had a pint of sorbet, and I thought, maybe that might work because, you know, sorbet can be quite sweet, and buttermilk is really super tangy, and I just put them both in the blender and had this crazy delicious, you know, milkshake
idea.
That was made with buttermilk.
Smart.
So that was my healthy fast food meal right there.
Oh, wow. I want to point out also that this can be made, this chicken chive burger so easily can be made gluten-free by using brown rice breadcrumbs, which have, you know, some crunch to them. And, of course, there are gluten-free rolls, udi.
Well, I mean, Faith, okay, the eggplant hater happens to be gluten-free.
Oh,
wow.
So
okay.
He is just a real problem at times.
Nice.
Because, you know, but he's actually doesn't have celiac or anything like that. He's
nope.
Just, he feels
sensitive,
better if he
yeah.
doesn't eat gluten. So now it's like, oh, come on, just like setting up a regular, just, you know, the standard pasta dish when you don't have anything in the house, you just want to make a quick pasta. It's like, oh, gosh, now I got to boil two things of water and I got to make the gluten-free. So I am always thinking this way also, and you're wise to point that out because there's so many ways to make adjustments that don't make you sacrifice.
Yeah, and pasta, by the way, I don't know if you've discovered Jovial, J-O-V-I-A-L, made in Tuscany. It's gluten-free. You cannot tell the difference from real pasta.
Oh, well, that's a good tip because we use, which we've gotten from Cesare Casella here in New York City,
yeah.
Sala Maria Rossi, we use, it's called Viva Maize, and it looks
ooh,
and it behaves beautifully when it's cooked, and it's got a nice chew to it, and it is like polenta. Think of like polenta in pasta. So anyway,
wow.
But we digress.
Okay. All right, listen. I want to say I love this cookbook, Mad Hungry Cravings by Lucinda Scala Quinn. You'll see it at our website if you want information there about how to get this book, Mad Hungry Cravings. Lucinda, can't wait to talk to you again.
Thank you, Faith.
Thank you.
Everybody have a great day.
Nice job. All right, the Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m., Saturdays at noon. We are online anytime. Find the recipes, food products, restaurants, value wines, easy cocktails, our cookbook, that salmon dish in the foil that we were talking about right now at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. Here's to pleasure, my friends, and remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.